على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على
Monday, the 1st of October 2001. We were looking at Surah Al-Hijr last time. Last time we were talking about the verses, the first seven verses that were talking about angels. Today, we go on to what Ayatollah Tabatabai calls one of the pearls of this surah, which is verse number 8. إِنَّا نَحْنُ نَزَّلْنَا الذِّكْرَ وَإِنَّا لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ. A very short verse 9 of Surah Al-Hijr. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إِنَّا نَحْنُ نَزَّلْنَا الذِّكْرَ وَإِنَّا لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ. That verily we revealed the Quran and surely we shall protect it. It's a very small verse, but it has a lot of meanings attached to it. A very big message that it gives out, and that is that the Holy Quran is protected by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from any kind of distortion. Now this itself is the subject of discussion. Now when I say discussion, I literally mean discussion, not just one-hour session that we have here. I mean discussion by scholars, where theses are written on the basis whether the Quran is distorted or not. And this verse itself lays the foundation that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself says that he has revealed the holy book and that he shall protect it from all distortions. Now in the study of Quran, there is something known as Ulum al-Quran. I am sure you may have seen the book in English by Ahmed von Denfa, which is the only English book I have seen in Ulum al-Quran. Did you say? Can you say? Genuineness of the Holy Quran, but that is not Ulum al-Quran. Translation or original? Original work, huh?
From
Hijaz University. This is a new one. Ahmed von Denfer's book, I strongly suggest that you read the book. Although it is a Sunni version, I must say. But at the same time, it will give you an insight into the science of Ulum al-Quran. So what does Ulum al-Quran entail? Ulum al-Quran starts from the history, from the study of the compilation of the Holy Quran, the revelation of the Holy Quran, preservation of the Holy Quran. It goes on to studying the Holy Quran in its divisions of surahs, Makki and Madani. It goes to study the verses that are muhkamat and mutashabihat, those verses that are definite and those that are not. Right? It goes on to study the verses which ones have been abrogated, the nasikh and mansukh. All these things fall under the science of Ulum al-Quran, and much more. And Ulum al-Quran is a subject that has been written by so many scholars, Shiite and Sunni alike. They have written so many books only on Ulum al-Quran. So from Ulum al-Quran, we go to see the study of the preservation of the Holy Quran. And this is important because we as Shias have continuously been bombarded by non-Shiites that we believe there is another Quran. And I must tell you that it is not only the fault of non-Shiite Muslims. To some degree it has been promoted by even some Shia scholars. And I'm not talking of scholars only, I'm talking of Zakirs, who come on the mimbar and recite, and then they say, yes, Fatima Zahra alayha salam had her own version of the Quran, or Imam Ali alayhi salam came with a version of the Quran, and when Abu Bakr wrote the Quran, Imam Ali al-Islam took it away, and so on. These things add to the fuel of the belief that no, we have a different Quran. And you will find so many articles, you will find so many allegations against the Shias, that the Shias believe that we have a different Quran. To the extent that they will go to the length of saying that the Shias claim that the different Quran that Imam Ali al-Islam had in it Surah Al-Wilayah, for example. Surah Al-Wilayah is a surah that blatantly or openly says that Imam Ali al-Islam was the wali of the Holy Prophet and so on, the wasi of the Holy Prophet and so on. So this argument, it's not a new argument, this has been going on for years now, right? And today we will look at two or three different things. First of all, we look at the logical explanation of how the Quran should have been completed during the time of the Holy Prophet, and that there would have been no addition, not even by Abu Bakr or Umar or Uthman or Imam Ali al-Islam during his reign of Caliphate, not during their times, nor even the time of Banu Umayyah and Banu Abbas. Nobody ever dared to add or omit from the Holy Quran. Now why and all that, we should look at that today. And then we should look at the ahadith from which some scholars have come to the conclusion that no, the Shias have a different Quran, within the Shias and outside the Shias. Right? So we shall study that and come to that original conclusion, which is that all scholars are unanimous today. All Shiites and Sunni scholars unanimously agree that the Quran that we have in front of us today is the same Holy Quran that was compiled, completed in the same manner that we have today during the time of the Holy Prophet. There has been no change, no addition, no omission from the time of the Holy Prophet up to today. Now, I shall be studying this from two books here. You see, I have kept open copies because there are certain ahadiths I want to quote, and that is why I will be quoting from these books. One is Ulum al-Quran. The title itself is Ulum al-Quran. It is written by Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Hakim. Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Hakim is the son of marhum Ayatullah Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim al-Tabatabai. Radwanullahi ta'ala alayhi. It makes him a contemporary. So he was the student of Shaheed Sadr, Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Sadr. And he says in this book that he has recorded this from the lectures of Shaheed Muhammad Baqir Sadr. So we shall look at his. And this other book is Ulum al-Quran again. It says Mujaz, that means the summary of Ulum al-Quran, by Dr. Dawood al-Attar. Again, he is a famous Shiite scholar, a contemporary, who has written in the science of Ulum al-Quran. These are the two books I shall be referring to. First of all, Shaheed al-Sadr. Shaheed al-Sadr gives a logical explanation. He says, we'll go on to hadith and study why and how and all that later. But first, let us try and understand logically that why the Quran could not have been distorted, and that the Quran must have been completed, the compilation of the Holy Quran must have been completed during the time of the Holy Prophet. Why? It is important to understand that during the time of the Holy Prophet, when the Quran was revealed, try and imagine that scenario. The advent of Islam was a new thing for the whole population. Everybody was becoming Muslims by the thousands, right, during the time of the Holy Prophet. And therefore, the advent of Islam was the thing happening around them. Today, Ajay, if you ask around, you go to the city, you go anywhere, everybody will be talking about America and the bombing of the Twin Towers and what will happen, will they hit Afghanistan, is the present thing. There, during that time, it was Islam. The Holy Prophet had come with a message, and Holy Quran was spreading far and wide. So try and understand, first and foremost, the importance of the Holy Quran at that time. If we were to live ourselves, to live during that time, and see that we were all Arabs, we were experts in eloquency, the balaghat of Arabic, right? And that this Quran has been revealed to bring a new religion and to guide us to the right path, And all at that time, the importance of the Quran cannot be undermined during that time. Today, keep ourselves aside. Today we do not attach the same importance to the Holy Quran the way the people did at that time, because to them, that was the fulcrum of the changes that was happening around them. Society was changing. Their style, lifestyles were changing. Their acts of worship was changing. Their idols were being destroyed and so on. All these changes happening, and in the middle of everything was the Holy Quran. So it was so important to them, to the lives of all Muslims at that time, number one. Number two, remember also that in the Holy Quran itself, Allah reveals to the Holy Prophet that beware, the Jews and the Christians distorted their books. Right? So they knew, the Holy Prophet knew, the Holy Prophet being a messenger knew the danger of distortion. And therefore, after having acknowledged that danger, there were tools, there were people who could sit and write. And we know the whole mission of the Holy Prophet was to make sure that that book was completed. That message was completed. When the message was completed, that is when the last verse was revealed. Now, how would it look that in the middle of such a huge transformation of humankind, of life for all those people, how would it look if the Prophet had left that task incomplete? Sayyid Shaheed Sadr drives this point so importantly. He says, how can we even imagine that a personality like the Holy Prophet, who transformed the society, the ignorant society, the Jahiliyyah, from idol worshippers to worshipping Allah, from those who are burying their daughters alive to those who would not do so now, from the barbarian Arabs to civilized Muslims, such a personality who had brought a message to transform that, what that personality would not have thought of how to protect the Holy Quran from distortion? When he knew the dangers of distortion that had happened to books before him, Injil and Torah. And so the Holy Prophet must have made preparations to make sure that there is no room for distortion after this. And that itself, he believes, Shaheed Sadr believes, is enough to show that the Holy Prophet must have done something to prevent distortion of the Holy Quran. And that is that the whole Quran was compiled in its entirety during his lifetime. Mind you, as the revelations came, see what we have in front of us, the Holy Quran, is not in order of revelation. Right? But as the revelations came, Jibreel would tell the Holy Prophet that this surah, place it, this verse, place it under this surah, this particular verse, place it under that surah, and so on. And therefore, the instructions of how the Quran is to be compiled the way we have was also received from Allah. Together with every verse that was revealed to the Holy Prophet would come the instructions of where to place the verse. So the Holy Prophet has placed the verses according to Allah's wishes. Right? So what we have today here is exactly what was revealed to the Prophet and how he was instructed where to place the verses.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Is there a reason why surahs become smaller and smaller as the Quran goes to conclusion? You have from Surah Al-Baqarah, Surah Al-Nas, and the size becomes smaller. Is there a reason? This is just a common sense question looking at the Quran.
Not that I have come across an explanation for that.
But that is the case, isn't it?
It is not exactly true. There are, you see, if you draw a graph, yes, the average is that it is reducing.
Mm-hmm.
But within surahs that come in the middle, there are some that are more and then goes back to less and more. If you look at the 30th sipara itself, you'll see the small surahs itself, the 30th sipara, you'll see the way that generally, yes, from big to small it goes, But you will find in between the smallest three surahs come, and then some surahs that are larger than the smallest surahs come. So it does vary, right? But as a general average rule that yes, biggest surah first and then goes down to smallest surahs, I haven't come across any explanation that says what is the significance of that particular pattern.
You mentioned that that's how they were revealed, as they were revealed. So I could assume that the last surah that was revealed to Prophet Sallallahu.
This is not in a chronological order of revelation, no. The surahs are not in a chronological order of revelation, please. What is happening, you know the first verse is Iqra Bismi Rabbika Alladhi Khalaq, which appears in the 30th Sifara. And the last verse appears in Surah Al-Ma'idah, which is the 5th surah. Right? So, the order in which the Qur'an is with us is not the order in which the verses were revealed. They are in an order that Allah instructed the Holy Prophet, place this verse here, place this verse here, and so on.
But that order, the order of verses, they're in the surahs, but in fact, the actual surahs that are compiled in this book, were they actually compiled,
during the time of the Holy Prophet, yes.
I'm not talking about the individual verses.
No. The boundary of the surahs. You know, surah literally means boundary,
yeah.
Offense, yeah? And those boundaries were defined by the Holy Prophet himself, as instructed the Jama'at.
But what about, there's no real order in terms of the chapters, is it not
The divisions, chapters, no. There is a certain thematic development. If you look at surahs, each surah revolves around one theme and so on, right? That also is within the study of tafsir. When you look at a tafsir, any tafsir, opening part will be defining the overall theme of the whole surah, right? But when it comes to parts, the 30 parts, the paras that you know, sipat, right? But that division came on much later for community.
Each chapter that you're talking about, each theme is one, I'm sure there's a link that in terms of how it's put together, there's not a link in terms of chronology.
Well, not as one would imagine of direct sequence, no. Right.
So can I ask one? The word kitab, does it specifically mean a book with pages and covers?
The kitab means a book.
The reason I'm asking, does that have significance that in his last sermon, Rasulullah said, I'm leaving behind with me?
Yeah, we're coming to that. There are many arguments to how you can prove. This is one way of Shaheed Sadr saying. Shaheed Sadr explains it this logically. Then there are, from the Holy Quran, from the Ahadith, of how we can come to the conclusion that by the time the Holy Prophet passed away from this world, the Quran must have been a complete book. Without any shadow of doubt. Right? Now, this is one way of looking at it, of Shaheed Sadr. The other one, what Safraz was just saying, the Holy Prophet, when he said, "Inni tarikun fikum al-thaqalay," I leave behind two weighty things for you. One is the Holy Book, Kitabullah, wa Itrati Ahlul Bayt. Now, Kitabullah is the Holy Book. Itrati Ahlul Bayt is my family. Now, of course, there is difference between the Sunnis and the Shias in this hadith, where the Sunnis say, Kitabullah wa Sunnati. Right? My Sunnat. But we are not arguing about Sunnat or Itrat. We are talking about Kitabullah. When the Holy Prophet says that I have left behind my book, a book, Kitabullah, right? If he has left behind a book, then if it was not complete during his lifetime, right, how is it possible that he could say that I have left behind a book? Or at least, as some scholars would say, at least there would have been questions asked to the Holy Prophet that where is this book and who is going to complete it if it was incomplete. So this hadith itself, by the Prophet saying that I leave behind a book, is evidence enough that the whole book was complete during his lifetime, number one. Number two, in the Holy Quran itself, there is a verse of challenge. That in kuntum fi raybin mimma nazzalna ala abdina, fa'atu bi suratin min mithlih. That if you are in doubt of what we have revealed unto our slave, our messenger, then come, bring a book like it, or a surah like it, a surah like that of the book. Again, the whole book must have been completed for the challenge to be felt, right? You come to hadith, you find that six scribes have been specifically mentioned as those who actively wrote the whole Quran. Six scribes. And this was a question asked to a Sahabi after the Holy Prophet died. You see, when the Prophet died in Medina, thereafter people used to come from far and wide. People used to come from Yemen, people used to come from South Hijaz and all that to visit Medina. And when they came to Medina and they were told the Holy Prophet has died, they would ask the question, fine, where can we get the Quran from? And almost there was a consensus from everybody there that if you want to know the Quran, the written version, then you go to one of these six people. Amazingly, out of these six people, deliberately or not deliberately, I cannot say, but the name of Imam Ali alayhi salam has been omitted. Right? So, the six names, Zayd ibn Thabit, Ubay ibn Ka'ab, these are the names, these were all from Ansar. Trying to find the names here. There were only six names. But the interesting thing here, Sittatun min al-Ansar, Ubay ibn Ka'ab, wa Zayd ibn Thabit, wa Ma'ad ibn Jabal, wa Abu Darda, wa Sa'ad ibn Ubayd, wa Abu Zayd. Qila huwa Qais ibn Sakan. These are the six names. Now the interesting thing here is that almost a consensus existed in Medina at that time, and that these were the six who you can get the Quran from. Now the question is, were these the six, only six people who knew the Quran? When Medina had so many people, only six people who knew the Quran? And therefore, it shows that these six were the ones who had the written version. You see, the Holy Prophet's style of conveying the Quran, or preserving the Quran, was that apart from having scribes who would write the Quran, the Holy Prophet encouraged people to memorize the Quran. And there were a lot of people who had memorized the Quran. A lot of them. But when this consensus developed that these six people had the Quran, it was understood that these six people had the written version of the Quran. And during the time of the Holy Prophet, the Quran was written on loose sheets, whatever their paper was. You know, some say it was a scroll from wood, and some say from rice paper, and there are different, some say from palm tree leaves. Whatever it was in a form that it was written, but in loose sheets, not compiled, not bound together in a book. Compiled together, where they knew what came first and what came last. You have to understand, 23 years of the Quran being revealed, right? One verse here, one verse there, one verse goes there. So it was not something that was bound together. These were in loose sheets arranged in an order that the Holy Prophet had received instructions from Allah. That this is the order of the verses. Right? And this is how it was. Now the Holy Prophet, after the revelation of the last verse, which was after Al-Ghadir in 10 AH, Dhul-Hajj 10 AH, and from that time up to the time of his death, which was 28 Safar 11 AH, you're talking 2 months and 10 days, right? He died within those 2 months and 10 days, and during that time he ensured that the order of compilation was the correct order. He ensured that those people who were around him reading out to him what they had written down of the Holy Quran, he ensured that they did that twice in that year. Right? So he ensured that. But after him, after he passed away, we'll look at what happened to the Quran after a while, inshallah. Okay. Ji.
We'll
come to Imam Ali Islam's specific role in compilation of the Quran, inshallah. Interestingly, Zanjani is somebody who has written Tariq Quran. And as Zanjani writes in his book that he quotes a hadith from the Holy Prophet. When the Holy Prophet was in his last days, he talked to Imam Ali al-Islam, and during that wasiyat to Imam Ali al-Islam, he specially told the Imam Ali al-Islam that, "Ya Ali, after I die, the Quran is lying under my pillow. Make sure that the correct compiled version is out there with people." Correct compiled version is out there with the people. And then Zanjani goes on to quote the turn of events after the Prophet's death, that when Imam Ali al-Islam came back, the first task he undertook was to make sure that the Holy Quran was compiled in its correct way. To the extent that there is a riwayat where Abu Bakr, a man came to Abu Bakr and said, "Look, Ali ibn Abi Talib is refusing to give you bayat." So Abu Bakr sent a messenger to Imam Ali al-Islam that, "Are you refusing to give me bayat? Why are you not coming forward?" And Imam Ali al-Islam sent back a reply that, "I have, you know, become occupied in this particular task of making sure that the Quran that the Prophet has left behind is in its correct compiled form, is not lost." Right? This is quoted in Tariq al-Quran by Zanjani. Now, any questions before I go ahead?
Is that a true hadith? Because why would he dodge the issue? Why not just say, "Because you're not fit"?
Sorry?
For me to give you bayat.
What?
Why would he dodge the issue by giving another reason?
Well,
why not just come out and say this is real?
We are not discussing history here.
No, but so I think, is that a true rewrite? Do we believe that's a true rewrite?
It is believed by many, yes. That was the answer Imam Ali Islam gave, when I'm busy preparing the Quran. Instead of saying that, "Look, I don't want to give you bayat now."
No, but we believe it, do we?
It's by a Shia.
Many things are.
I have an inclination to believe in that rewrite. I see no reason why Imam Ali al-Islam could not have answered about it.
So has any of the original written versions survived or any piece of the
original? The earliest version, according to some claims made by the Quds library, the Astana Quds. Now, Astana Quds, I don't mean the Jerusalem. I mean Astana Quds in the library of Imam Rada al-Islam in Khurasan. There they have a copy of a page claimed to be written by Imam Ali al-Islam in 48. That even was during his time as a caliph. The other person who is reported to have seen something earliest is from Damascus, that it has been reported to have seen. I don't know whether it still exists or not, that in Damascus he saw a copy from the time of Osman. From the time of Osman, Damascus, Malay. I don't know, I have not seen museum.
Tashkent. Tashkent Malaysia
is changed
with Imam Bobby
of the form, which is
available
for scholars to
go and see. Tashkent. The two states which is next to Iran and Azerbaijan. Tajikistan. You know, you said about the challenge of verse coming in that you that it was completed. So how come that wasn't the last verse you did?
You know, I heard of it when I said it, huh?
Yeah, that argument has already been used by Sayyid Khoury. The same argument was used for Kitab, for example. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments is that the word Kitab is used 50 times almost in
the... When the book was not complete yet.
Sayyid Khoury says that Kitab doesn't necessarily mean a complete book, but in the process of writing. So there was physical, it wasn't in the hearts of the people only. So there was an area where it had been written. That is why it is constantly being referred to as a kitab, because kitab is not something in the heart. when the book is lifted up, then maybe they will write to you and you might have to. No, that kitab, you see, when he says, I have left you, that I am leaving behind as I go, that is a different connotation. Or even the other one that there is a hadith that Omar says, the book of Allah is sufficient for us. That is also like an evidence. So the people knew that the Quran, you know. You remember when the Prophet wanted to write something? Omar said to him, the book of Allah is sufficient for us.
If you take the last thing that you mentioned, that Imam Ali was compiling the Quran, that's why he said to Allah, I thought, you may have already answered, but I thought that the Quran was compiled in Sanskrit.
Yes, I didn't mention earlier that the Quran was compiled during the time of the Holy Prophet.
Not during that Uthman.
No. We will come to that. What happened? The compilation of the Holy Quran was complete. Please, let's get this right. Sheikh Sadduq, even in his I'tiqadna, where it says our beliefs, you know, Sheikh Sadduq says, we believe that the whole Quran was complete, compiled in the same manner that we have today during the time of the Holy Prophet. The Holy Prophet left it. I always try and remember that argument that Ayatollah Khoi, Rahmanullah Ta'ala,
did too.
We will come to Abu Bakr, what he did, and Uthman, what he did, and the different interpretations. But we Shias and Sunnis alike believe that the whole Quran was completed. Why is this called Mashaf-e Uthman? We'll talk about it just now. We haven't finished that. Because we'll come to Abu Bakr, what he did, what his role was, and what was Uthman's role, right? So, the argument that Marhum Sayyid Khuy Rahmatullahi Ta'ala Alayh gave to Marhum Mullah Asghar when he went to see him about the Quran. Like if you have a document today, that document, say for example it is an important document, say a will left behind on how the estate is to be divided, right? The heirs get together and they discover that this page is wrong, or this passage in this page is wrong, or there is something missing, so we contest the will. The rest of the will not be accepted until you prove that the will is genuine. If we question the Holy Quran today, that is this complete or there is something missing, then the whole book is kept aside. It's a very logical argument that you cannot question the authenticity of the book, otherwise you are rejecting the whole book. Right? Simple logical answer. That no, we accept the whole book, there is nothing missing and nothing changed and nothing distorted. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is distorted. Right? Now, before I go to what Abu Bakr and Uthman did to know that this is what it was their role in the compilation and preservation of the Holy Quran, I wish to talk of the ahadith from which these things came up, that there is tahrif. Tahrif, by tahrif, the Arabic word tahrif means distortion, right? The ahadith that are recorded even in Shia books, not talking of Sunni books alone, even in Shia books, that use the word tahrif. And from there has been this argument or counter argument against the Shias, that look, the Shias believe there is tahrif. And some scholars have picked it up and said, look, the hadith says there is tahrif, and therefore there must be tahrif, right? To look at a hadith, whenever we study hadith, and this is for general purposes, whenever you look at a hadith, there are two ways of studying the hadith. First of all, you study the hadith from this chain of narrative. Who has narrated it? Right? And on the authenticity of the narrator, you decide whether the hadith is worthy of any further consideration or not. If you find that these characters who are reporting these ahadiths, or these people who are reporting these ahadiths, are not worth the hadith, they are either liars, the concoctors, fabricators, whatever they are, then you forget the hadith. One way of looking at these ahadith that are there recorded in our books as well is that they are mainly narrated by two people. One by Kitab Ahmad bin Muhammad al-Bari. Ahmad bin Muhammad al-Bari, from his book a lot of these ahadith have been taken. And he, from the Kutub al-Rijal, you know what Kutub al-Rijal is? Kutub al-Rijal are books of people. That means any narrator you have. This Kutub al-Rijal are encyclopedic works on lives of narrators. So when you have a hadith that is reported from Fulan, you look at Fulan and see whether that person, according to history, was he during that time, was he a religious person, was he living with the Imam, could he have heard the Imam, and so on. Right? This is a different study altogether. So from the people who are experts in the study of people, you find that Ahmad bin Muhammad al-Bari was a liar, was renowned for his deviation, you know, inhiraf. That means he was not a good Muslim, right? This is one. And the second person from whose authority people have taken these ahadith is Ali bin Ahmad al-Kufi. Now, Ali bin Ahmad al-Kufi is also recorded in the books of people as a liar. Right? Mind you, you will find a lot of liars in that encyclopedic work. Right? Somebody who is openly known to lie. Right? Both these people. So what Shaheed Sadr does, he says, first of all, if you look at the sanad of these riwayats, you will find that these have mainly come from these two people. Right? And these two people are both renowned for their habit of lying. But besides that, he says that is one way of looking at that. The other way of looking at a hadith is to study the contents. We study the contents and then come up with a possible plausible answer. That plausible answer, does it conform to what we believe? Or to what they believe? What they say, the hadith, that there is inhiraf. Inhiraf meaning tahrif, the distortion. They say there is distortion. The hadith mentions the word distortion. So, does the hadith truly say distortion in the same manner that they are saying that there is a change in the Holy Quran? There is something omitted from the Holy Quran? There is something removed from the Holy Quran? You look at the hadith, you study the hadith from its contents, the words and the meanings used. So, without going into details, the first hadith, this is reported on the authority of Abu Dharr al-Ghaffari. لَمَّا نَزَلَتْ هَذِهِ الْآيَةَ يَوْمَ تَبْيَضُ وُجُوهٌ وَتَصْوَدُ وُجُوهٌ. In Surah Ali Imran, verse number 106, there is this verse, يَوْمَ تَصْوَدُ وُجُوهُ وَيَوْمَ تَبْيَضُ وُجُوهُ. No, يَوْمَ تَبْيَضُ وُجُوهُ وَتَصْوَدُ وُجُوهُ. That means on the day when faces will become white and black. Now this is talking of the Day of Judgment, right? قال رسول الله, Abu Dharr is reporting, قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, ترد أمتي علي يوم القيامة على خمس رايات. My Ummah will come to me on the Day of Judgment under five different banners. خمس رايات. ثم ذكر أن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم يسأل الرايات عما فعلوا بالثقلين. These banners, these five banners, the Holy Prophet will come forward and ask the holders of the bearers of each banner, what did they do with ثقلين? Hadith ثقلين, كتاب الله وعترتي. Right? So the bearer of each banner will respond. This is hadith, an authentic hadith reported by Abu Dharr al-Ghaffari. It sounds authentic so far. Whether it is or not, if we are to assume it is authentic, we look at how our Shia scholars and some Sunni scholars pick this up and say, look, the Shias believe in Tahrir, right? When the Holy Prophet will ask the bearers of these banners, that how did you treat the two thaqalain, the thaqalain, فيقول فتقول الراية الأولى, the bearer of the first banner will say, أما الأكبر فحرفناه ونبذناه وراء ظهورنا. As for the first one, the major one, which is the Quran, الثقل الأكبر, Thakalain are two thikl, the heavy things. A thikl al-akbar, the heavier thing, the major thing is the Quran. Amma al-akbar faharrafna. The same word is tahrifa. Harrafna, we distorted it. وَنَبَذْنَاهُ وَرَاءَ ظُهُورِنَا. And we displaced it, or rather we placed it on our backs. وَأَمَّا الْأَصْغَرْ فَعَادَيْنَاهُ وَأَبْغَضْنَاهُ وَظَلَمْنَاهُ. As for the minor one, that is the family, فَعَادَيْنَاهُ, we were hostile to them. وَأَبْغَضْنَاهُ, and we hated them. وَظَلَمْنَاهُ, and we carried out atrocities and injustices on them. وَتَقُولُ الرَّايَةُ الثَّانِيَةُ أما الأكبر فحرفناه ومزقناه وخالفناه. Again the word حرف. حرف is the same word as تحريف. حرفناه. The second banner will also say the same thing. The second banner will also say the same thing. That as for the major one, we distorted it, we tore it, and we opposed it. وأما الأصغر فعاديناه وقاتلناه. As for the younger one, the minor one, we were hostile to it and we fought them. That means the family of them. Now, from this hadith, the Holy Prophet himself is saying that people who will see him on the Day of Judgment will say that we distorted the book. Right? So where do you keep? How do you answer that? This is one hadith. Remember the hadith. Mind you, the hadith talks of the word harafna. Harf is the same word as tahrif, distortion. We distorted. A second hadith. I'll just mention three hadiths. There are four hadiths, right? The second hadith is during the time of Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, salawatullahi wa salam alayhi. قال دعا رسول الله بمنا فقال أيها الناس إني تارك فيكم الثقلين ما إن تمسكتم بهما لن تضلوا. كتاب الله وعترتي والكعبة والبيت الحرام. This is what the Holy Prophet said in Mina, that I leave behind two things, the weighty things, the Quran and my family. Now, this, the fifth Imam is reporting that the Holy Prophet called people in Mina and addressed them saying, this is what it is, I'm leaving behind two things. ثم قال أبو جعفر عليه السلام. Now the fifth Imam then said, أما كتاب الله فحرفوه. As for the book of God, they have distorted it. وَأَمَّا الْكَعْبَةَ فَهَدَمُوا. As for Kaaba, they have destroyed it. وَأَمَّا الْعِطْرَةَ فَقَتَلُوا. As for the family, they killed them. وَكُلُّ وَدَائِعْ لِلَّهِ قَدْ نَبَذُوا وَمِنْهَا قَدْ تَبَرَّوا. The important thing here is, the fifth Imam is saying that as for the holy book, they have destroyed it. Look at the evidence that is piling up. Huh? The hadith says that on the Day of Judgment, people will tell the Prophet, we distorted the holy book. The fifth Imam is saying that as for the Quran, they distorted it. Number three, عن علي بن سويد قال كتبت إلى أبي الحسن موسى عليه السلام وهو في الحبس كتابا. That is our seventh holy Imam. Whilst he was in prison, Suwaid, Ali bin Suwaid wrote him a letter. إلى أن ذكر جوابه عليه السلام بتمامه وفيه قوله ائتمنوا على كتاب الله فحرفوه وبدلوه. The seventh Imam responds to this letter of Ali bin Suwaid, and in that letter he mentions many things until he comes to a part where he says they were entrusted with a book, but they distorted it and changed it. These are the ahadith that have been picked up by Sunni and Shia scholars alike, that there has been some change and distortion. And last one, قال أبو عبد الله عليه السلام إن أصحاب العربية يحرفون كلام الله عز وجل عن مواضعه. That Abu Abdullah is the sixth Imam who said that the people, masters of Arabic language, will distort the words from its origin. Right? Now, these are the three or four ahadiths. However, what we have to understand is that distortion is not just changing the physical words. Right? Distortion is first and foremost, a distortion is changing the intention of the verse. the verse was revealed intending a certain purpose. Now when you change that, you are distorting that. You are distorting the meaning of that verse. And this reply was given with evidence from the writings of Imam, where Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam wrote in a letter to Sa'd al-Khair, وَكَانَ مِن نَبْذِهِمَ الْكِتَابَ أَنْ أَقَامُوا حُرُوفَهُ وَحَرَّفُوا حُدُودَهُ. Right? That means that they were the people who were given the book where they preserved the words أَقَامُوا حُرُوفَهُ وَحَرَّفُوا حُدُودَهُ. That means they distorted the rules. The rules that they were given, the boundaries that were drawn by the Quran, they distorted that, but they preserved the words. And this is the kind of distortion that is being referred to. During the time of the Holy Prophet, on the Day of Judgment, when we meet the Holy Prophet and we will say that we distorted the Quran, does not mean we physically changed the Quran. The Quran changed, its meaning was distorted by us. Because we will start to use the Quran, and mind you, we do use the Quran, whether it is us or other Muslims, but we do use the Quran as and when it suits us, and in a manner that suits us. And therefore what we are doing is, whilst we are preserving the physical words of the Holy Quran, we are in actual fact distorting the meaning and the intention of the Holy Quran. Interestingly, in Surah Ali Imran, verse number 7, which talks about the Mutashabihat and Muhakamat, verse number 7 of Surah Ali Imran, it talks about possible change, but it does not talk of change in the meaning, change in the words. It talks of us misunderstanding the intended meaning of the words. Right? So that is the distortion that is being referred to in all the ahadith, that when people will say, or when the Imam said that people have distorted the Quran, people have distorted the Quran not physically in the words that have been revealed, but in the meanings, because they have failed to seek the right answers from the right people. Right? And that is why they have failed to preserve the Quran in its intended meaning. Now, we come to the time of Abu Bakr. What did Abu Bakr do and what did Osman do?
Can you give an example of some of the meanings which have people have tried to change?
The Hadith?
The one that comes to my mind, which isn't from the Quran, is the meaning of the word Mawla, for example. Would that be an
accurate? Absolutely. Ulul Amr, for example. Right? The Ulul Amr was revealed on Imam Ali al-Islam and his and the Aimma, right? Now, that was an intended meaning. You apply that, you go to Saudi Arabia and they say Ulul Amr are the kings. Now, is that the same application of the Ulul Amr that is in the Quran? That is where the meanings are distorted.
Like, for example, they say the hands of Allah.
You know, these five people who would come to the Prophet in this hadith, I mean, all five of them destroyed the Quran, and one of them said,
well, the hadith mentions only two. He's not gone on to complete the hadith here. And probably two out of five say we distorted the Quran. The others would be bold enough to say we never recited the Quran.
But who are these five people? Who are?
From the Muslims. There are five different...
Just
are we talking about Shafi'i, Hanbali?
No. This would be any... Please.
Why do you mean you say all Muslims are divided into five groups? That's what this hadith is saying.
That's what this hadith is saying.
Every Muslim
All Muslims will be divided into five different... according to their actions and beliefs.
Vis-a-vis the Quran.
So the number five has significance.
Well, you see, if there were three, you would say, why three and why not more? We would have preferred them to be only one, so that when the Holy Prophet meets, okay, these are the right people. But no, there is no significance attached to why 5 or 7.
So, if this hadith is true, then are we saying that what
is being
mentioned in the hadith is the
distortion
of the meaning?
Yes. This is the hadith of Imam Muhammad Baqir al-Islam.
No, the first one. Because there are 5 groups.
Yeah?
The one that Abu Dhar al-Affan is
relating.
That hadith.
Well, what I'm saying is this hadith so true or not, is not the subject of a discussion. Let us assume this hadith is true. Then we study the content. Right? Whereas I said earlier that Shaykh al-Sadr believes that most of these ahadiths which mention the word tahrif come from two specific sources, both of which are questionable. Right? So, it is up to us to look at it any way we like. What he has done in this study is that, you see, it is easy to say, okay, this hadith is not true because the narrator, how would we know? So he takes it a step further and says, even if we are to assume that this hadith is a true hadith, let us look at it from the context perspective. So what is the context? Right. Now, the compilation, the exercise that is referred to during the time of Abu Bakr and Uthman. During the time of Abu Bakr, what happened was that his Quran, or the kitab that was there, right, were placed together as per, according to that one hadith that I mentioned, as per the recommendation of Imam Ali. But this is what the Holy Prophet has left behind. And what Abu Bakr did was that he officially endorsed that, being the caliph, that this is the Quran. Right? So anybody who came to say that, but I have an addition to make, or I have something more that I heard from the Prophet, they had a council. It was not like Imam Ali alone. It was Imam Ali with 4 or 5 of those the names that we gave, who were companions of the Holy Prophet, who had learned the Holy Quran from the Holy Prophet himself, and together they agreed on these things. Right? In fact, there is even one riwayat where they unanimously agreed on everything but one word. Right? Where one of them thought something and the other thought something else. And Abu Bakr turns to Imam Ali al-Islam and says, what do you say? When Imam Ali al-Islam suggested that, no, this is the word it is, that was final. Everybody agreed. Because Imam Ali al-Islam was acknowledged the most learned, most pious companion of the Holy Prophet. That was the other Quran that he had brought. That was, we're coming to that story that during the time of Abu Bakr he brought a Quran which was in the order of revelation, right? Which according to some hadith do exist. But again, many of the scholars reject that hadith. During the time of Abu Bakr, so what Abu Bakr did was he agreed and endorsed officially that this is the Holy Quran. And he made sure all efforts were concerted towards these things, that the Quran should remain one and one only. So that book from cover to cover, right, the first of its kind, was done during the time of Abu Bakr, not Uthman. We'll come to Uthman just now, right? Now, during that time, it is, and I'm sure you must have heard, I have heard it also, that it is reported that Imam Ali al-Islam brought his own version of the Holy Quran. Right? And he said, this is the Quran that I have. And Abu Bakr brought his version of the Quran. And Imam Ali al-Islam then lifted his Quran. When I was young, I used to hear the argument that this was to preserve unity amongst Muslims. I remember in Mombasa, in our madrasa, when we were taught, we were told that Imam Ali al-Islam lifted the Quran away, his copy, the one he had brought, to preserve unity amongst the Muslims, so that Muslims have only one Quran. These scholars here talk about this hadith, and they say, yes, there is this hadith, right? But the Quran that Imam Ali al-Islam brought was no different from the Quran that the Holy Prophet had left behind. The only thing was, the hadith that Imam Ali al-Islam says, and many other Imams have said, that if you recite the Quran that is with us, you will know everything there is to know about halal and haram. Because every verse has its own interpretation the way Prophet taught Imam Ali in Islam. If this verse is to be understood this way. So the tafsir of every verse, sabab al-nuzul of every verse, why it was revealed, where was it revealed, and what explanation the Prophet gave Imam Ali al-Islam was recorded down in the hands of Imam Ali al-Islam. And he brought that forward as a Quran to be adopted, that this should be adopted. And they said, no, this is the book. The book is the book. The Holy Quran in its entirety is that Holy Quran. You find hadith of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam who says that if you were to recite the Quran that we have, right, you would find our names in there. You would find the mention of our mention in there. That's what it says. Our dhikranafi, right? That we would be mentioned there. Now, they are mentioned in the Holy Quran. But not by name. So the Quran is no different. But what Imam Ja'far Sadiq Islam was saying, that if you recited the way we have, the way the Holy Prophet taught Imam Ali Islam, you would find which verse explains our mention or our dhikr in the Holy Quran. Right? So Imam Ali Islam brought the Quran that had tafsir, that had asbab al-nuzul, that had the ahkam, muhkamat al-mutashabihat, that had the explanation of nasikh and mansukh, and all that, apart from the Holy Book, apart from the pristine verses, you know, the pure verses of the Holy Quran. But no, Abu Bakr decided, no, we want only the Holy Quran, the words of Allah, nothing else. Right? So that was accepted by Imam Ali al-Islam, and that formed the basis of the Quran. Now this was during the time of Abu Bakr. Yes.
When you said that
Imam Ali was why don't we have a trace of that mashab now, the one that Imam Ali al-Islam took? Imam Ali withdrew that, you know that. I mean, if the hadith is true, Imam Ali al-Islam withdrew that for fear of conflict. You see, if we had that book today, no, we see today we have tafsirs from Imams, don't forget that. And that tafsirs from the Imams are the same thing that would have been mentioned in the book. But what it is that what has happened now, that we have not taken that as a book, proclaiming that it is our Quran. We have taken bits and pieces from the Imam. The same teachings have come to us. What we learn from Asbab al-Nuzul, we learn about Tafsir, we learn about Hadith, this has all come from the Imam. From that same original Mashab. Interesting, very interesting. That would have explained Hadith in Quran as well. In fact, that is evidence. If she has believe that there is some omission, right? They would say that Ghadir is something that should have been mentioned to remove all that. I must read you this particular part about Ghadir. You see, the very fact that the Holy Prophet got together people in Ghadir to show who is his successor proved that his successor has not been mentioned explicitly in the Holy Quran. His successor, Imam Ali al-Islam, had been explicitly mentioned in the Holy Quran, then the Holy Prophet would not have had the need to gather people again to tell them, this is my successor. Quran was right? The Quran ma nahatu etle. Now, what I wanted to read was Abu Basir, his companion of the sixth Holy Imam. He says, I asked the sixth Holy Imam an qawlillahi azza wa jal, on regarding the verse, أَطِيعُ اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُ الرَّسُولَ وَأُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْكُمْ. So here Abu Basir asks the sixth Holy Imam about this particular verse. And Imam replies, فَقَالَ نَزَلَتْ فِي عَلِي بْنِ أَبِي طَالِبْ وَالْحَسَنْ وَالْحُسَيْنَ عَلَيْهِمُ السَّلَامِ. This verse was revealed on the favor of Imam Ali and Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein. فَقُلْتُ لَهُ إِنَّ النَّاسَ يَقُولُونَ. Abu Basir now. Abu Basir is a companion of the sixth Holy Imam. He says, so I told the Imam, إِنَّ النَّاسَ يَقُلُونَ. People are saying, فَمَا لَهُ لَمْ يُسَمَّ عَلِيًّا وَأَهْلُ بَيْتِهِ عَلَيْهُمُ السَّلَامُ فِي كِتَابِ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ. Why is it that the names of Ali and Ahlul Bayt are not mentioned in the Holy Quran? قال فقال قول لهم. Now the sixth Holy Imam is saying, tell them, إن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم نزلت عليه الصلاة ولم يسم الله لهم ثلاثا وأربعا حتى كان رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله هو الذي فسر ذلك لهم. Tell them that on the Holy Prophet was revealed the verse regarding prayers, and Allah chose not to mention whether the prayers have to be two rakats or four rakats. Obey those who have been given authority, the verse says. But Allah decides not to mention the names of those who have been given authority. Why? Because it is up to us to ask the Prophet, who is this who has been given the authority? And the Prophet will explain. Just as the verse of the Salah has come, and Allah has not mentioned how many rakats of prayers you have to recite, it is only the Holy Prophet who explained which namaz has to be recited at what time. وَنَزَلَتْ عَلَيْهِ الزَّكَاةَ وَلَمْ يُسَمَّ لَهُمْ مِنْ كُلِّ أَرْبَعِينَ دِرْهَمًا دِرْهَمًا. And that the verse of the zakat was revealed unto them, and there was no mention of what percentage is zakat payable in the Holy Quran. It is the Holy Prophet. If the Holy Prophet gave them this and they took it, if they accepted how to pray from the Holy Prophet when the Quran says pray, if they accepted how to pay zakat when the Quran says pay zakat, what, how much amount, then they should accept the Holy Prophet to say who should be our leader when the Quran says follow. Right, this was the Imam, the reply of the sixth caliph. Right, now we come to Uthman. Uthman was the third caliph, and this Mus'haf Uthman, from the time Abu Bakr died up to the time of Uthman, how many years? 13 years, maybe Umar was the caliph, 12 or 13 years. And during that time, the Islamic empire, far and wide, right? Now, what was happening? This is one thing you must remember. There were no dots in Arabic and there were no fathah kisras. There were no dots in Arabic. That means ba, ta and ta were written just like that. No dots. And Arabs at that time could read. Whether this is a ba or a ta or a ta. Ajim, Hay and Khay, the Arabs knew what it was, right? But at that time there were no dots and there were no fatha kisras. Now come the time of Uthman, by that time the different versions of reading were increasing, of reciting. The sab'a qira'at that you have, you know, these things were getting out of hand now. So what Uthman did was he collected all that was there, right? And he burned everything in front of Imam Ali al-Islam, in front of all the companions who were alive, right? And he said, look, do you agree that I want to do away with all this and we leave behind only one correct version? Ayatollah Khuy goes to the extent of saying that recited version that was accepted by the Sahaba at that time, during the time of Uthman, is actually the version that was revealed to the Holy Prophet, meaning that what we have today, exactly the way it was recited during the time of Ali. Note. So that was the contribution of Uthman. And therefore, this became known, the Quran became known, the Mus'haf, or Mus'haf of Uthman. Right? Then thereafter, of course, you find the history of addition of Fatha and Kisra in different forms, because initially, even the tashkil, you know, there are two kinds of sciences. There is i'jam and there is tashkil. I'jam is the adding of dots in ba and ta and tha, the adding of these dots to differentiate what is ba and what is ta and what is tha, right? What is jim and what is kha and what is ha. And this adding of dots is called i'jam. Tashkil is the fatha, kisra, dhamma, tanween that we have in a word so that we can read. People who do not know Arabic can recite the Holy Quran. These things were introduced later. I'jam took place, tashkil took place first in forms of only circles and half circles. And the place where it was put, the half circle or a complete circle above or below, would show whether this was a fatha, kisra, dhamma, whatever. And thereafter, this thing came about, you know, the fatha and the kisra. So today, the Quran we have, right? And that is why you will no longer find any difference between the Quran and any other Quran. Whether you pick up a Quran in Malaysia, or you pick up a Quran in Saudi Arabia, or you pick up a Quran in South Africa, right? Whether a Quran that has been printed in Saudi Arabia, or a Quran that has been printed in Pakistan, or a Quran that has been printed in Malaysia, the Quran will be the same Quran. What?
Translation.
No, translation.
It's from Arabic or
Arabic? No. I haven't come across the study of translation. There is a very nice book. There's a whole encyclopedia on the history of translation. When was the first translation? How, by who, and all that. I can check that up.
So we roughly understand that in the future there will be different languages.
You see, not only in future, at that time the Islamic Empire was spreading far and wide. Plus there was an addition to Greeks and Romans and all that, right? So I am quite, it's quite possible that some attempts must have been made to translate the Quran. But without mentioning anything until I am sure. Yeah. Incidentally, Abu al-Aswad al-Du'li is the person who picked up this, and there are one or two incidents, interesting incidents that took place. One was when he went to his daughter's house in Basra. Abu al-Aswad al-Du'li is the close companion of Imam Ali al-Islam, and he is the father of Arabic grammar, as he is known. He went to his daughter's house. For those of you who understand Arabic, it's interesting. And his daughter tells him, "Ma ashadul har, ma ashadul har." The way she said it, literally means, "What is the hottest time?" Right, as in season. So he replied, "That is Shahru Najir. Shahru Najir refers to Shahru Safar, right? During the time of Jahiliyyah. I mean those." No, there was a generation that still used to speak the olden names. He said, Shahru Najir. فَقَالَتْ لَمْ أَسْأَلُكَ. She said that I did not ask you. So he said, what did you mean? She said, I just wanted to say how hot it is. Now, the difference in how hot it is and what is the hottest time, right, is just a dhamma and a fatha. مَا أَشَدَّ الْحَرْ means how hot it is. Ma ashadul har means what is the hottest time. So Abu al-Aswad al-Du'li, who was considered as one of the top speakers in Arabic, was upset by his daughter, you know, mispronouncing, misreading of just ma ashadul har instead of ma ashad al-har. This was one incident. Another incident, that verse number 3 of Surah At-Tawbah, he heard somebody reciting. وَاللَّهُ بَرِيءٌ مِّنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ وَرَسُولُهُ. Right? You see, he heard somebody reciting وَاللَّهُ بَرِيءٌ مِّنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ وَرَسُولِهِ. Now that would mean that Allah is disassociating himself from those who are pagans and from his messenger. Whereas وَاللَّهُ بَرِيءٌ مِّنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ وَرَسُولُهُ would mean that Allah is disassociating himself as well as the Holy Prophet is disassociating himself from the pagans. So you can imagine a dhamma and a kasra can change the meaning so much. When Abu al-Aswad al-Du'li heard this, he came to Imam Ali al-Islam and says, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, enough is enough. I have seen Arabic grammar and language being slaughtered left, right, center. We must do something. And that is when Imam Ali al-Islam ordered him a pad, said, start writing. إِنَّ الْكَلِمَةَ ثَلَاثَ إِسْمٌ وَحَرْفٌ وَفِعَلٌ. Right? That a word, and that is where the rules of grammar started evolving. Arabic had no grammar at that time. Imam Ali al-Islam with his companion Abu al-Aswad al-Du'li was the first one to establish the parameters of Arabic grammar, that a word in Arabic will either be a noun or a verb or a preposition and so on. This is how it all started. This is how the need of putting the tashkil, you know, the fatha and the kasra and the dhamma, was felt by those people who understood that future life of the Holy Quran can only be preserved if we make sure nothing changes.
So all these rules that we have today, they're very complicated rules, people just knew in their heads without any formal grammar. All these complicated rules that we've learned,
They have been developed, must say. But two interesting things. One, today, if you study Arabic grammar, study a book called Mabadi al-Arabiya, for example, right? This is a book that's in 5 volumes, Arabic grammar only. You look at every rule, there is one principle that could take you, 10 lessons to study. One principle. Right? That principle came from Imam Ali. This is number one. Number two, that every time you study the application of that principle in Arabic language, right? That this is where the fatha will go, and this is fathatain, and this is kasra, and so on. Every time you study the example, the reference examples are given from the Holy Quran. To the Arabs, the Holy Quran forms the basis of perfect Arabic language. If there is anything, if there is a clash of principles and Quran, they will say the Quran is right. This is the principle we have to admit. Right? So this is how Quran is so closely linked to Arabic language. Arabic language was not as far advanced, developed at that time as it is today. Right. Ji, any other question?
There's one interesting point. When the Mus'haf of Uthman was finally declared, so important was this thing that no deviation from this style. And after the last day, some of the interesting, not mistakes, but personal style of the scribes has been kept in the Quran, although it is not strictly correct. For example, the scribe Uthman appointed, he wrote Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the Rahman ibn put Ali. He wrote Raha
Meen
Nun,
not Meen Alif. Samawat, yes.
That's why today, even in the Quran, if you look at Rahman, they have preserved the Meen Nun, although it should be Meen Alif, but instead they have put a dagger on top. Right? The other thing that scribe had a style which is wrong, in the word Salat, he put wow, there is no wow in Salat.
But it has been accepted in Arabic language.
It has been accepted in Arabic as a man.
Salat, ma kya wow?
In Quran.
In Quran, yes. Yeah.
Quran ma salah, normally salah no wow, but Quran ma look at salah, it has a wow. Because that fellow wrote the wow. To preserve that this is, we are not deviating at all from that. We are left in the Quran even to preserve. Although it doesn't really make any difference.
So the biggest protectors of the Quran are those who have memorized the Quran. These are the ones who have continuously over the generations being there to make sure that any new print is not against what they know. This happened during the time after the Prophet's death. Because whilst the scribes were getting together, they used to call on a lot of people who had memorized the Quran to tell him that what they have written down, what they are writing down, and what people remember, is it the same or is there any difference? So the biggest protectors of the Holy Quran have been the memorizers, the Hafaz al-Quran, right? And that is why you find that there is so much encouragement from Allah Himself to memorize the Quran as much as you can. There is thawab in it, I mean, there is benefit in it, yeah. But in itself, it is a mechanism to protect the Holy Quran from you.
When Mus'haf was created, was the copy of Imam Ali's Quran even destroyed?
Then what was it?
Mus'haf of Uthman, the final copy when he got
everything. See, Imam Ali al-Islam never maintained that as his version of the Quran. The moment during the time of Abu Bakr, according to that hadith, and if we are to accept that hadith, first of all, accepting that hadith has its own controversy. Some do, some don't. If we were to accept the hadith, Imam Ali al-Islam withdrew that copy of his and no longer presented it as a mushaf any other time. Right? So then that means that being an Imam, he accepted the version that Abu Bakr wrote. He accepted the version that Usman wrote.
Yeah, Abdullah bin Masud was testified
to
Usman almost, because Usman wanted to burn his
whole life
work, his whole tafsir.
Yes, it was, yes, burned
people. Yeah, they burned them. And Abdullah bin Masud, I think, went half mad after that.
Because it was his life work that was dragged from his house. But, one of the points you make of it, wasn't good. Abdullah bin Masud was known for having Quran. He had tafsir. So, in the same way, even Imam had tafsir, because that's what the
safety
Imam said. That if you learn the way I.
Yes, but that used to come in the Quran.
So, that's probably one of the evidence that there is nothing like that, because otherwise we would have heard that Imam Ali al-Islam also had to give his mushaf for Bantu. Because Imam Ali al-Islam was present when all these things happened. When the different versions were brought together and burnt, Sayyid Murtaza al-Askari, when he was here in London in 1990, he gave a lecture on the same thing, on the hit of Quran, the preservation of the Quran. And he also believes the same thing. He doesn't believe that Imam Ali al-Islam ever brought a Quran different from what the Quran is. So, probably never took
place. One of the points that you made the last time we talked about this was that when they actually, in those days, the people who did the masters, when they wrote the Quran, they wrote their tafsir, it was just for the continuation, and a non-Arabic speaker person would not know when the Quran started and then it stopped and the tafsir began.
That's what a Bakr stuff.
Very confusing.
That's what a Bakr stuff.
That
yes. He had to remove what was not Quran from what is Quran.
But it was not like a forgery, it was just the tafsir.
Yeah, it was. Because you see, at that time it was obvious to everybody.
Continuing on my point, you said that it may have not taken place that he didn't write it. But when a Sikh Imam did say that if you had learned the way that the Prophet had showed Imam Ali, then does that contradict that the Sikh Imam was in fact not saying the truth?
No, Sixth Imam may have been saying the truth, but Sixth Imam did not say that there is a book. Right? There is, that knowledge is there. We have got that knowledge from that. Right?
There is definitely a book. I think it's not in dispute that there is a book called Mushaf Ali, for example.
Mushaf Fatima, say.
Mushaf Fatima, Mushaf Ali. Can you remember back in Islam, there was a man who disputed with him on the Diyah Masail. And Imam said to Imam, go and read the book of Imam Ali. And then he read it and he said to him, look, this is written by the hand of an indicator by the book. So the Messiah is like that book. It's strong than this type of book. But there were some books they had that they used to get and that used to run in the family.
And I read somewhere in one of the books that there was
a massive
load of books that were intended after each Imam.
A massive book.
No, it's
Sheikh Mufid Ali al-Rahman. Bol, this is our question. Sheikh, you are a Mandali, you should be.
I've heard of the Quran of Imam Ali, whose first time preaching the Imam to the Prophet Imam. You couldn't bring that Quran as a proof that he is.
At the same time, you can't wait to see. This is the problem, see? This is exactly where we are then challenged.
You see, one of the arguments used, which I think makes sense to me, is that there is absolutely no purpose to have any Quran hidden from the Muslims. Otherwise, it's not a guidance for us. If Imams have a Quran, that, you know, like there is a hadith that Arabi wrote there, Imam Jafar ibn Islam said, you people don't even have one-fifth of the Quran, you know, and between the 8th and 9th para, there is a portion that is missing. Between the 8th and 9th, there is a portion missing.
8th and 9th, Surah.
There is a portion missing that is bigger than one-third of the Quran.
Fasl al-Khitab. Fasl al-Khitab.
Hadith like that.
What's the point of having a Quran like that? I think those hadiths have to be dismissed rationally, because there's no point an imam having a Quran which people don't have.
This is not the Quran,
is for the Muslims.
No, it's probably the same Quran, but just as proof that he is the Prophet Imam.
So people will be asking, I don't think it's proof that you are the Prophet Imam. The Quran was meant for the Muslims, not for the imams.
So I think what his point is that as a script, written by Imam Ali, was handed out to the Prophet Imam. So when he comes and says, look, I am the Prophet Imam because I have got a book written by my grandfather.
That also logically doesn't make sense. It is not a miracle to prove the imamate of an imam.
That's the point he's trying to get at.
Right, let's finish some questions before we go, please.
Two questions. One was when Usman was burning the Quran, why didn't Imam Ali object? Is that the Quran to burn the Quran? Number one. Number two. Question two is, why is Imam Ali being portrayed as apologetic, withdrawing everything from life?
Right. First of all, according to one riwayat, that Imam Ali, first of all, one riwayat that Usman did not burn it, Usman poured vinegar and acid over it. Right? There is one riwayat that says that. And there is also one hadith by Imam Ali, do not call Uthman Harraq al-Quran. Hadith where Imam Ali says, do not call Uthman Harraq. Harraq means one who has lit fire to the Quran. Right? That means that Imam Ali endorsed what Uthman had done. Right? Quran bari rakhu abras dekha in what? In jest. In respect to the Holy Quran. Right? So that time what service that Usman was doing was absolutely vital for the Holy Quran. And to make sure that nothing remains behind. Right?
Imam Ali approved, in other words, when he came
to Eka, number one. Number two, portraying Imam Ali as apologetic, astaghfirullah. Imam Ali al-Islam, if we were to call him apologetic, I mean, if we were portraying him apologetically, then perhaps we have misunderstood the role of Imam Ali al-Islam. Imam Ali al-Islam was all the time together with these people to make sure that nothing drastic changes from the fundamentals of the Quran. Right? He accepted everything because he also knew it was going the right way. Aje tabe mane ek sawal nahi kiya je mara magaj ma chhe. Right? Which I will ask towards last because I'm waiting for everybody to ask the questions. Right? But Imam Ali al-Islam was there not in as apologetic, but okay, hi, I'll let him leave you. No. He was there to make sure. And had anything gone wrong fundamentally, right? He would have put his foot down. Okay, this principle, there is no compromise.
The Prophet took a lot of effort to establish Imam Ali as the leader of the Jews. I think there were a few months between the last revelation.
Two months, couple of months. Yeah.
Already a lot of
it
had been memorized and written down. Why wasn't a complete book then presented
at that time?
Say this is the book,
it is
completed, and
I'm
handing it over to Imam Ali, or
what was done by the Holy Prophet? What could not have been done was the actual tashkil that we have, for example. You see, the order that we have was a collection. What Prophet left behind was a collection of papers, for example. If we were to assume that each verse was written in a paper, then that collection of papers was left behind, right? In the order, of, as instructed by Jibreel, that this verse should go here first and second and so on, right? So this was left behind. Now, what Abu Bakr did was to bind it, so that nobody can put any extra, nobody can remove anything, right? And what Usman did was to remove all the other versions, because by the time Usman came, there was already dilution in the recitation, and there were, you know, mistakes in distortions in the way people remembered. And they say, no, we remember it is Mathala and not Mathara, for example, you know, that kind of. So he had to remove that.
I still understand that he had heard. I know he must have known when he was going to pass away, and there could have been controversy. Why wasn't? I mean, I believe possibly there was a book presented. I'm not saying it was in case what they believe, but for me, it would have been that he could have established Imam Ali, went to the effort to establish the leadership. He would have been at the same time established the book So it wouldn't make sense that Usman would be known as the compiler when he should have been given a prophet there, and then they said these organs are out. These people are putting the drugs, this is what it is. There you go. So,
but you know, for example, I think back in the sample that, for example, the prophet did not know if that was the last revelation. It's not the last revelation. The word following it comes after it anyway.
But we believe that the prophet knew of the events and what
was. He didn't know exactly when he was going to pass away, I don't think. He knew he was going to die soon because he said that the dream comes to me once a year, the shape comes to me twice. I take that to mean that I'm going to die. Means has recited, made me recite the Quran twice to him. And that means that
my end is drawing near.
Yeah, so he started off his speech saying, I have been called and soon I will respond. You know, in the final Ghadir Khutbah sermon, he says, I have been called by Allah and soon I will respond. And soon I will pass away. But when exactly? Also, there is one hadith. The last revelation was 7 days before he passed away. So when there was no stop to revelation that he would say, the revelation really would stop with the death of the Prophet. Because up to that, while he was alive, there was no full stop in the Quran.
I still believe that it wouldn't, it still sounds very ambiguous.
I'll tell you what is bugging you.
The statue of the Prophet would have made sure that during his life it was being.
I'll tell you what is bothering him, because it is bothering me as well. Right? And it's the question that I wanted to ask. What is bothering him? Is why would people like Abu Bakr and Uthman be accorded the opportunity to contribute or to make such a contribution to Islam? Is that what? Ajay, game hoy, right? What Uthman has done for the Holy Quran is a service to the Holy Quran. The question is, why would it be left until him? But this side mara, who Quran ni baat karo chu? Who amna acharya Quran ni baat karo chu? Why should we be even given a status that today mushaf e Usman kevay chu?
Yeah, exactly.
And that is why Ari finds it difficult to believe ke bhai the Prophet should have left it behind. The Prophet must have left it behind.
I think, for example, Abu Bakr, it makes sense that he would put the Quran between covers. That's what he did. He put the Quran between two covers. Because he was ruling in the name of Islam. It made sense for him, as the first thing he should do is to secure the Holy Book, right? And all he did was he ensured that he had a copy, a master copy, and that was a source of reference. Right? So he took the Karatis, yeah, the pages, and he put a bounty. That's what he did. Uthman had a challenge, which was a challenge that wasn't there at the time of the Prophet. At the time of the Prophet, everybody was a perfect Arab speaker. There were hardly any non-Arabs there. But at the time of, by the time Uthman came, the empire was three times larger than it had been. Almost the Arabs were outnumbered by the non-Arabs, as Muslims, I mean. So the problem was, you know, the Persian were reciting with their accent. Look at today, you know, you can tell from the accent of somebody where he's come from, how he recites the Quran.
But the past wasn't the Prophet aware. Islam is going to spread in the near future.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you.
How many things have happened by the Prophet's successors, which have been a step in addressing new problems, whatever it is. I mean, the Prophet left behind certain things, for example, even in law. You know, in law, a lot of the jurists in the early years had to make up their laws as they went on. Because they didn't have precedents, they didn't have a clear ruling in the Quran, and they didn't have access to clear hadith from the Prophet. So how were they deciding? Many matters. Poll tax, land reform. You know, there are many examples of jurists, early jurists, who literally made up the law as they went on.
Let me just end with one story. We're running out of time here. Ekaj hadith. My question, the thing that was bothering me was that, you know, Quran is so sacred, right? And for these people's names to be associated to have done something great, hers to the Holy Quran, was something that I found difficult to swallow. Until I read a book by Shaheed Astaghaib, Shaheed al-Mihrab, Al-Dhunub al-Kabira. Al-Dhunub al-Kabira, the major sins, any other, I think he mentions the incident in the time of the Holy Prophet when he talks about al-ikhlas, sincerity. And he mentions of an incident where during one of the wars, the battles that the Holy Prophet had led the expedition, he had called on all man folk of Medina to accompany him. So they all went. Everybody went, all man folk. But one man decided not to go. He didn't want to go. Brave soldier, but he decided not to go. So when he was left behind, the women gathered together, went to his house and offered him a chadar. You might as well wear this. No, take it back. So he got so angry that he climbed his horse and he went straight to where the Prophet was fighting. He went there, he went straight into the battlefield and fought so bravely, killing so many people that So the companions were so amazed. Oh, this guy is fighting so bravely and so wholeheartedly, and he goes right into the front lines of the enemies and so on. And he was killed. He was killed. So after the battle, when the Holy Prophet and his companions started picking up the bodies, you know, they kept together all the bodies, they came to the body of this man. And the companions, the other companions, you know, they couldn't help but comment to the Holy Prophet, Ya Rasulullah, such a lucky person. He fought so bravely. Listen to the comments of the Holy Prophet. The Holy Prophet said, Subhanallah. Either Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gets his religion promoted by people he hates. His religion promoted by people he hates. And so they asked the Holy Prophet, what are you saying? You mean this person? Isn't this person did not come to fight this battle? This person came to impress the women. He was not even supposed to come here. He had refused to follow the Prophet. Since then, I am convinced that sometimes things happen for the better of the religion of Islam, where Allah uses people who he hates or we hate. But Subhanallah, kena dushman pa se di man kata. Since that, I am convinced. Okay, fine. Service to Islam.
But this is an example in the Quran that goes to ages, Fir'aun, for example.
Huh?
This is another theme that goes to the Quran for a long time, Fir'aun, for example.
Yes.
And many other
things. Yes.